this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
All right, we're back with another episode of Y'allitics, and we're doing something different this time, which I like.
What are we doing different?
I set you up perfectly.
I'm not sure what the setup was.
All right,
We're back at our favorite place here. Yeah. We're back at Manhattan Project Beer Company on the west side of downtown Dallas.
And we're having a light one, looks like.
I always have the light one.
This is the same thing.
Necessary evil. I'm one of those guys, though. If I see something on the menu that I like, I'll keep ordering it over and over again.
You know what they call that, right?
No, go ahead. What is this?
An old man.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
That's probably so. But you're having another fruit beer.
Hey, I am. I'm having the I think they call it the Plutonium 239. Everything has sort of an atomic name here, which, you know, Manhattan Project. This one is a coconut porter. And it's a good drink.
It is a good drink. We are with our friend and colleague making his debut appearance.
It's our first
time. Y'allitics. Jonah Javad from WFAA.
You know me, I'm usually very, you know, tapped into politics in Texas. So,
if there's anybody I'm thinking that's tapped in, it is Jonah. Here's what Jonah did. Jonah is friends with and has gotten the interview that we've been trying to get on this podcast for 5 years now.
Yeah.
Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
And Jonah's talked to him multiple times, and you just recently sat down with him.
Jonah's making this look easy. We can't get him, but, you know.
I like how you guys are framing this like he and I play golf on the weekends.
That's what I thought. But before we start, let me say this. So you're interviewing Mark Cuban at the station the other day.
Yeah.
Wheeler walks upstairs, and he usually ignores me when he walks in.
I do.
But he walks right over to me, Jonah, like a ninth grade girl. And it's like,
I did.
Still has sunglasses on. You'll never believe who I just saw. You'll never believe it. I'm like, what, man? Who was downstairs? The new CEO? Who was it? So I walk in, and I'm like out of it.
Why do you give me that voice? You make me sound like I'm a little crazed.
The sun is in my eyes, and I take my sunglasses off, and this guy passes me in the hallway and says, hey, what's up? And Wheeler says, hey, what's up to it? And Wheeler passes.
I had come around a corner. The hallway was dark. They were heading into a room, and the guy just looks over and goes, hey. And I go, hey. And as I'm taking my sunglasses off, and then I get them off, and I realize, oh, that was Mark Cuban. That just doesn't happen every day.
Walking into your interview, though.
Yeah, and you're making it sound like we had him in a nice little, hideaway alcove in the station.
It kind of is.
It was just a locked room. No, it's, we'd been trying. So the backstory is I've been trying to set that interview up for, I don't know if I should admit this, but I will. 2.5 years.
Oh my God!
So when he first, came out that he wanted to create this cost plus drugs company, I was enamored with it because here's this billionaire owner for the Dallas Mavericks now wanting to pivot into pharmaceuticals and disruptor pharmaceuticals. You don't hear that a lot. You know, you don't hear about Jeff Bezos wanting to go start a company to help out the common man. So really, for 2.5 years. I sent him emails every month.
Wow.
I had reminders.
That's how it's done.
I had reminders in my phone. Send Mark
follow-up.
I really did.
Wow.
And
wow.
Every single month, I reached out and I say, hey, are you ready to do this?
And he always answers back real brief.
And every single month he goes, not quite yet. We're rolling out this. We've got this coming up, and this will be a better time. And he kicked the can on it for two and a half years. And finally, after the election, this past election, early January, I reach out again. I say, okay, the election's over. You're done with the Mavericks. Are you ready to do this? And he goes, he CCs his administrative assistants on it. He says, let's do it. Get with them to set up a time. Boom.
You're like, how about right now? Yeah, you just want to nail that down right away.
Well, and we'll get to this, I'm sure, but it was fortuitous that we set it for. So this was in January.
That's amazing.
We set it for early March, and something might have happened between early January and early March.
Well, so before we get into cost plus drugs, which is fantastic, and Cuban's weighing into politics all the time on X, on Twitter, but what happened in early March, of course, is Luka Doncic traded by the new Mavs administration
to the Los Angeles Lakers.
No one can believe it, and it's become a conversation piece. We were talking about Southwest Airlines yesterday saying, oh, we're going to start charging for bags.
Yeah.
And my boss says, this is the Luka moment for Southwest Airlines.
That's true.
That's what people are referring to.
It's a designation now, the Luka moment.
It absolutely is. But let's talk about that. And then the other big news that people who may not be Dallas Mavs fans may not realize is the American Airlines Center in downtown Dallas in Victory Park is getting old by stadium standards.
Yeah.
And the new owners are talking about, hey, maybe we ought to move this over to Irving where we purchased 259 acres. So tell us what Cuban said about, first, Doncic, because that was pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
And second, how likely do you think this is going to be that he actually, that the team actually moves to Irving?
Okay, well, I'll start off with kind of what was the hot topic this past, you know, sports rotation. Really the biggest Dallas sports news of the entire decade?
Yeah,
right.
Century?
No, I think it's a biggie.
Yeah, so Mavericks trade Luka Doncic. They get Anthony Davis, Max Christie, and a 2029 first-round pick in return. And any basketball fan is looking at that trade thinking, how is that all you get in return for Luka Doncic? No disrespect to the players.
Right.
But how is that all you get for a 25-year-old All-NBA player? And so the line of questioning with Mark, and I want to make this clear as well, is, you know, the interview was not set up to talk about Mavericks. But organically, it goes that way, because when you sit down for 45 minutes with a guy who used to have the majority stake with the Mavericks for nearly 25 years, it's going to lead that way.
Yeah.
And so we spoke about cost plus. We spoke about his sort of his legacy and this new chapter that he's embarking on. And then we segue to Mavericks.
So you saved that.
It was just sort of, let's see where it goes.
It was killing you, though, wasn't it? I mean, you knew you wanted to ask about it.
If you see Mark on the street, what's the first thing you want to ask him?
Right.
Yeah. What happened, man?
Yeah, so, right. Yeah, I mean, of course. But I felt like it was more respectful of me to do the interview that we set out to do. And this is what we set up, was to talk about Cost Plus and really this next, you know, his next chapter with his companies, really. And so we migrate to the topic of the Mavericks and Luka Doncic. And he would not give me a direct answer on if he would have ever traded Luka. But if you watch the interview, you can see all the questions before and after that that kind of hint at to how he feels about it. He told me directly that, end quote, no disrespect to Anthony Davis, which I feel like everybody seems to say about this trade, just get a better deal.
Yeah.
Were the words he said. Just get a better deal. And again, that falls in line with really how everyone thinks. It's common sense thought. So I kind of asked him a bit about his involvement with the Mavericks, because people remember Mark Cuban for being the guy on the sideline yelling at refs and basically looking like a 13th man for the Mavs.
And being fined repeatedly for that.
Oh, my gosh. Sure. Yeah, and I asked how much money he's been fined by the league over the years. He couldn't give me an exact number. He's probably he's probably lost track. I'm pretty sure it's in the millions, to be honest. But, I mean, 20-plus years of serving in that role, like almost like an unofficial mascot of the team. And then all of a sudden, you know, in 1 year, you fall out of the picture. Not even just out of the picture, but you're not even consulted on a trade of that magnitude.
Which I was stunned with. That was a takeaway from that interview that stunned me, and I think it probably stunned a lot of people, that a lot of people think that he knew about what was going to happen, that he was let in on it, he kept the secret. It's stunning to see the level to which he's been sort of carved out of that process.
Yeah, and listen, I'm just going based on what he told us in that interview, but he found out after the fact, and he was not consulted on it. The only stuff he's really he's not consulted on really much at all, but Rick Welts, who's now in there, who replaced Sint Marshall, like sometimes he and Mark will communicate about administrative type of stuff, but when it comes to actual basketball GM type decisions, Nico Harrison is running that show, and ownership is, you know, will give their vote of approval, and Mark's not brought into that conversation, which is why I asked him, you know, 20 plus years of being that mascot, how do you feel about not being, you know, brought into that at all? I mean, is that hard? And he admits, yeah, because think about dedicating your life to, you know, it's almost like a fourth child for him, the Mavericks were. And, you know, in the blink of an eye, you're sort of an afterthought when it comes to major moves. So he's kind of just having to watch this unfold from the sideline like the rest of us are. And then I asked him if he regrets trading the team, and he wouldn't really go so far as to say yes, but there are...
He got right up to the line, though.
Yeah. You can tell it hurts him to not be a part of...
It's got to. He built
of
this.
Things, of
right.
things like this. And totally... It would be weird if he didn't
right,
feel that
sure.
way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If he was more detached.
Totally dissociated.
Yeah, yeah, right. To me, that would be far more bizarre.
Yeah.
To me, it just sounds like a dude who owned a team and sort of wishes he still had it, but it was the right time to sell.
That's what it felt like, too. And you're going to hear the interview here in just a moment, especially this segment we're talking about, when Jonah's talking about the team and Luka Doncic and why he sold the team. But let me ask you something separate from the interview. Does Nico Harrison keep his job? Does he stay in the GM role? Do you think will he maintain his job after this?
If it keeps going south, it would be hard to imagine that he does. Then again, the ownership gave the vote of approval on the trade. So, are you blaming Nico?
Yeah.
If you fire Nico, which would have to come from the ownership, are you blaming Nico? Or you can't fire yourself for approving that trade. So. Yeah, I mean, if this continues to go in a bad direction, which it certainly seems like it is, even if Anthony Davis comes back, it's just the fan disassociation is just,
yeah,
it's real. And people thought that, they'll get over it. There are a lot of people who, there's no getting over it.
Yeah.
That was the line in the sand.
They became Lakers fans that day.
Or just not Mavs fans.
Right.
And,
jeez.
Yeah, that's real. That's not like a hyperbole. There were Mavs fans who stopped supporting the team entirely after they did that trade.
And we've seen before that, you know, even if management is behind a decision that, you know, the so-called CEO pulls the trigger on, there is that word scapegoat, you know.
Yeah. So. I would think, but then again, these owners have only owned the team for about a year.
Sure.
I would think they'll give Nico a longer leash in this situation to see, okay, let's see what this plan was and maybe see it through next season. But, you know, Kyrie's now got a serious torn ACL injury. It's going to take a long time to rehab and recover. It's like they might not be the version that they thought they could have until midseason next year.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, this kicks the can on what is this Mavericks team going to look like. And the only person to blame really is Nico Harrison. So you could, in theory, let him go, but then what?
Yeah.
You're left with, you have to hire somebody to then pick up the rest of the pieces.
Yeah, start over from there. Let's play this segment of the Mark Cuban interview that Jonah did here. And when we come back here in just a moment after this, we want to talk more about the cost plus drugs and play you that segment and Cuban talking a little more politics or current events, if you will. But here's Mark Cuban with Jonah Javad.
How did your son react to the trade? See,
about like I did.
Did you have to break it to him, or did he?
No, he knew. I knew 5 minutes at the most before, and so everybody else was, when it hit, everybody knew. And
did you tell him ahead of time, or did he?
I didn't know ahead of time.
Oh, you didn't know.
No.
I think that night you told me that you weren't involved with it. So are you like all the way out? Are you not? Do they not consult you on anything, or are they just?
They might tell me something after the fact, or now with Rick Welts in particular, if there's something going on where I've had experience, I'll reach out to him and just say, hey, expect this, 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 and this. But from a basketball perspective, you know, I hear about it after the fact. I don't hear about anything beforehand.
Is that tough? I mean, because you really took that organization from a pup 25 years ago. Is that tough being
that removed? Yeah, there are parts that aren't fun, obviously, especially this month or last month. But, you know, they paid for that right.
Yeah. You don't have regrets about selling the team?
Sometimes I get mad and I wouldn't have done this, but, you know, no, not really, because, you know, go back to why I sold.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want my kids to end up in this exact position at some level if they made a mistake, right? I mean, literally imagine if I didn't and my kids had taken over and they made a mistake like this.
You didn't want them to go down, you know, the road of owning the
Not
Mavericks
that I didn't
or,
want them.
Or to deal I with just, the criticism of it?
It's just social media has changed things dramatically. And they grew up with social media. All their friends are connected to them on social media. And to log in and, you know, scroll through your feed and just see what we're seeing now,
mm-hmm.
you know, seeing what happened with the Jones family, you know, continuously, I didn't want my kids to go through that. And then there were other things, you know, like you can only scream at the refs and at the league about the refs for so long before it's just like, I'm an idiot. Stop.
And how much money have you paid the refs over the years?
A lot. Not the refs themselves.
No,
I've never paid the refs a penny. I offered one penny.
You, I almost got you there. Yeah. No, I mean the league.
I don't even know.
Yeah.
And then there's just the nature of the, like, Patrick and you know, the Sands Corporation, they're better suited to deal with building than I am.
Really? I mean, they're real estate.
Yeah, people. That's what they do. And I didn't want to find myself in a situation where I couldn't compete because I didn't know how to do that stuff. And with Cost Plus, you know, instead of me diving in having to learn how to build a casino or arena, a lobby, that stuff, I'd rather focus on Cost Plus from a time perspective.
Would you ever have traded Luka Doncic?
I'm not going to go there. It's not. It doesn't even matter. You know.
I mean, I saw you were at the game though in LA, and I mean that signifies. And I think you dapped up his dad in the stands.
Yeah,
I mean,
Sasha.
So there's got to there's some sort of
Well, there was a connection. Just
there's
because we traded, like, I still talk to Steve Nash. I mean, I went through this before when Steve Nash left and then won two MVPs.
Yeah.
Right? The good news is that we went to the finals and won a championship. So I've been through something, but there wasn't social media back then, so it wasn't quite the same. But, yeah, I mean, you're going to make mistakes. And, you know, I think the biggest challenge that the Mavs have right now is there's nobody who's really outgoing to communicate. And it's not so much what you do, it's how you communicate why you do what you do. And that's their challenge without me in front.
Do you think some of that is because they're kind of new to this? I mean, they've been
I think it's just not their nature.
And well, they've been also NBA owners for about a year. And I mean, Nico's been GM for, what, a few years.
Yeah.
But entirely, that's not a whole lot of experience. Do you feel like that's part of it?
No, they're just not me, right? You can't expect them to be me where, you know, when Steve Nash left, I wrote a blog post explaining why, you know, and talking about all these things. I talked about, you know, how we traded for Luka. All these, that's what I did. You know, that was the way I connected to fans. And that's the way I tried to build a connection with fans. They're just not me.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. There's things they're going to do that are better than anything I can do in that regard. But, it, you know, I still think, it, you know, it may take longer now, but it'll be okay.
Have you talked to Luka since the trade?
Yeah, we texted a few times.
Are you guys good?
Yeah, we're good. It's like, you know, I'm still great with Sasha and Luka's team, right? I'm still friends with them. So, you know, just like it took a while, but, you know, Steve Nash and I are friends again. And so.
You mentioned, I mean, was your son upset about the trade?
Yeah, I mean.
Were you?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And I've said this before. If you're, you know, if the Mavs are going to trade Luka, that's one thing. Just get a better deal. You know, no disrespect to Anthony Davis, but, you know, get three. If I still firmly believe if we had gotten four unprotected number ones and Anthony Davis and Max Christie, this would be a different conversation.
That seems to be one of the criticisms following.
Yeah, but it's not my call, so it doesn't matter.
You mentioned that you're an MF.
FL.
FL. Yeah. I mean, that's so hard to say. I'm sorry. I mean, I've been here like 8 years. It still does not roll off the tongue, but this has been a tough month plus for fans. A lot of them are super angry. Are they justified in feeling that way?
Yeah, you're justified however you feel.
Yeah.
You know, we can't, what makes sports different than every other industry, you know, Google has, Texas Instruments has a record quarter. Nobody throws a parade. And when you win, if fans are passionate enough to show up in 100-degree weather and line the streets, then you've got to expect when things don't go the way they want, they're going to be just as passionate in response.
I've seen some comments on social media, fans who are upset at the whole situation, but some who are upset at you for selling the team. And they feel, I don't know if it's betrayal or what that emotion is, but
they didn't feel that way when we went to the finals last year.
They did not. what would your message to those fans be who feel that, you know,
Father Time's undefeated, right? Father Time's undefeated, so nobody plays forever. And so you go through adjustments, and hopefully Nico and Patrick, you know, have a plan, and they'll make it work.
They haven't consulted you at all throughout any of this?
I have not talked to Nico about it. I said hi to Nico twice after the trade.
So that's Mark Cuban there, and he said a couple things, Jason, that really struck me. Number one, about the fans, because we're all still flabbergasted by what happened.
And hard to believe we found out about when he found out.
Right. Yeah. And then secondly, I want to start with this, Jonah. You asked him about the reasons for selling the team. And one of the two reasons, the top reason, was his family. We just heard this, but explain this.
Well, what's interesting is...
he didn't want to keep up with the Joneses, it turns out.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, his reasons for selling the team have all sort of changed over the last year or so.
Like, I could see that.
Initially, when he sold the team, I reached out and it had more to do with media rights and, the thought of basketball is becoming more of a resort gaming... It's more of an event type of feel than it is for just tuning in for ratings numbers. And so he had some hesitations there and thought maybe it was a good time to sell. That's at least what he told me when they sold the team. But in this interview, I kind of asked him about that. And he brought up not wanting to put his kids into a position to answer for trades like that and to be criticized publicly and dragged through social media. And he made the comparison to the Jones family, which, I mean, Stephen Jones, Jerry's son, part of the organization, his other kids, part of the organization in some capacity. And so you're putting the family name, kind of all over, and they end up having to get criticized because of, things that are done by Jerry or Stephen or whomever. And so he didn't want his kids to have to kind of fall into that same situation. And so one of my big takeaways from really that entire interview is he is really loving being a dad.
Good for him.
He's really loving being a involved father, and he's spending a lot of time with his son, going to games with him, and just kind of trying to get every ounce of, bonding time, father bonding time that he can, because he's about to be 67 years old, and it's essentially closing that chapter on the Mavericks, the Shark Tank chapter, and really I don't know what clicked specifically, but I get the sense that he just felt like, if I don't do this now, it's going to be hard for me to have a relationship
down
the road.
I love that. You find your priorities in life.
And he's not too much older than you either, Wheeler, so that is interesting. But he looks great. He looks great for his age. To talk for a moment, too, about what he said here about the fans, because the question was whether the fans and his comment was, they'll forget it when we win, essentially.
that was a good line. Because I brought it up. I think there are a lot of Mavericks fans who are angry at Mark for selling the team to who he did because of what they then allowed to happen. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a domino effect. It's like, how could you have done this? It's like, well, 9 months ago, they were in the NBA Finals, and so you weren't criticizing me for selling the team then, which is totally fair. But I think he made a really – he had a great quote about how if you're going to have fans and passion and show up in 100 degrees for a parade – when things don't go right, you got to expect that passion to come out in different ways. And I think you've absolutely seen that with how Mavs fans have reacted. So he's aware of it. I don't think he's taking too much of the blame on that, nor do I personally think he should. It's business. You don't always know, what the next owners are going to do. You would hope that they would have some sort of acumen, or that the GM wouldn't, try to, do something that nobody else in basketball history would do. That's kind of what his standpoint was on the fans. He understands it, but I don't think he's necessarily taking blame, nor do I think
it's a good point. I've sold houses before and then, driven by them a couple of years later and have been stunned by what they did to the property, and you just think, I should have, had some control over that. I did a lot of work on that place, and look what they let happen to it. Something that fascinates me with Mark Cuban is, he, built this thing and made it what it was and then sold, and not only sold it though, but sold to the Adelson family of Las Vegas Sands fame. And their politics could not be more different. And it's not just that, they go into the office and, one thinks one way and one thinks the other way. They are active, and they put their money and their support and their names behind these movements, they are total polar opposites. The Adelsons have donated a ton of money to Republicans, to President Trump, and we saw Mark Cuban out there during the campaign last year, really pushing back against candidate Trump at the time. And since the administration has started, he has been very vocal about some of the things that the Trump administration has been doing. But he's not just about politics. He is concerned about different policy issues, too. Mm-hmm. And part of that, I guess, drives this idea behind cost plus drugs.
Yeah, it is crazy to see the difference between their politics and his own. And that was my thought originally, was how are you supporting all these policies and these politics then selling to a team that is going to want to push the other side? So I didn't ask him straight up about that.
Yeah.
I did ask him how this administration relates to cost plus.
Yeah.
Because what we're seeing with this administration a lot is, you know, taking things to a personal level, right? And I'm going to get you back kind of thing. And I thought that maybe this administration might try to do things to not allow cost plus to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Talk about a little bit about what cost plus is, because yeah. it's a disruptor.
Yeah, it is. I'll backtrack here. So cost plus is a company that Mark Cuban started a few years ago that provides cheaper generic drugs, and they do have some brand names, but mostly generic drugs. And that it trims the upcharge that a lot of these pharmacy benefit managers, PBMs, are charging consumers. So a drug that you may typically get, a generic that, you know, you go to your hospital and they write up the prescription to your drugstore and you go to pick it up, and it's, let's say it's $250, whereas it costs the manufacturer maybe $50 to make. Mm-hmm. And so they're getting that $200 upcharge and you're left footing the bill. Well, cost plus is, we're going to take that $50, we'll put like a 15% on top of it, $5 handling fee, and so you're ended up with whatever the math is on that, mm-hmm. Which is significantly cheaper. And so they're trying to offer this as a way for them to sustain the company. They need to upcharge a percentage so they can exist, mm-hmm. But it's not rooted in maximum profit margins. Mm-hmm. It's not rooted in intense capitalism the way so many companies that are backed by billionaires are.
It's funny how that's revolutionary.
Well, what's interesting about it is, like, for a company like this to succeed, you need to have a quote-unquote virtuous backer, you know, because if it's run by a board or it's run by
stockholders,
they're going to want maximum profit margins. So that 50% upcharge that they're doing on the cost of making it, they could push that all the way up to just shy of what PBMs are charging.
Right, so, undercut them by $5.
So then the whole mission of the company would get watered down. And so that's why it's kind of one of those deals where, unless you know for certain who would, you know, you're selling the company to, this is Cuban's quote-unquote baby. And I got to give credit to Dr. Alex Oshmiansky. It was his idea to start this company. He's the one who emailed Mark Cuban about it a few years ago asking for investment. Cuban liked the idea and said, hey, I'm just going to back your whole thing. Mm. Put his name on it. It's his only company that has Cuban's full name on it. And so, you know, slowly but surely, they're starting to scale and trying to get their pharmaceuticals into more homes.
And I would imagine they have a lot of people cheering for this because, you know, for some people, this might be the difference between actually taking the medication that you need and not.
That's entirely true. And there's a lot of people who have had to make hard decisions. Do I die? Do I take this medicine that costs so much money that can keep me alive longer?
Yeah,
which
even
is
though
an,
I can't make ends
an
meet.
Insane
yeah.
decision, yeah. like it, between literally life and right. death, yeah. and it's just because a drug costs so much money, and that this is kind of where Cost Plus is trying to mitigate that high cost and allow people to buy drugs for cheaper and hopefully live longer.
Before we get to the Mark Cuban interview on this segment with Cost Plus with Jonah here, I want to bring up a poll that came out the other day. This is from Echelon Polls. It's very loose. It's very early for 2028. But it's fascinating. Cuban falls right in the middle of the Democratic pack. He's right behind the Michigan governor, Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and the Pennsylvania governor, Josh Shapiro. Cuban's next, then John Fetterman, Pritzker, Warnock. Even Jasmine Crockett is below that. Before we listen to this interview, part of the interview you did he say anything about running for office? Do you think this might be an early step to doing that, this cost plus?
I thought it might be. I didn't get the sense that he is. He's,
why not?
He's maintained multiple times that he doesn't want to run. And again, I think part of it goes back to not wanting to bring his family into a public eye situation. And with all due respect to the NFL and like the Jones family, who's criticized, you know, publicly all the time for decisions they make. Imagine being the family in the White House, criticized at every turn. And so that would be something he would have to reconcile. And I'm just not, I don't get the sense that that's something that he wants to do, is that he feels like he can make more of an impact on the greater good in people and society by kind of working from the sidelines and doing companies like this and trying to disrupt old systems that are not made to profit for everybody, but for just the select few that, you know, are have something invested
in. Of course, so I'll point out that people who are, you know, thick into policy and wade a lot into politics, a lot of times say no until the day they say yes. So
true, but you bring up a good point too about family. That's one of the reasons he said he sold the team, that he told you as well.
Plus, like, what's the gain, you know? Like,
right.
He's got a pretty good life, I would imagine.
Yeah, he's doing fine here. Here's the second half of Jonah's interview with Mark Cuban. This is about cost-plus drugs and about kind of what's happening today.
I was doing some research on your favorite social media platform, Twitter X.
Okay.
Your bio says, dunking on the pharma industry with cost-plus drugs. Nice basketball pun, by the way. But that's it. That's the entire bio.
Yep.
So why'd you change it to that, and what is Cost Plus Drugs?
Because Cost Plus Drugs is so important to me. The official name is Mark Cuban Cost Plus Drugs, and it's the only company I've ever put my name on. So that tells you something, because I wanted everybody to know just how committed I am to it. But kind of the origin story of Cost Plus is interesting. I got a cold email from a Dr. Alex Osh-Myansky, who was based in Denver at the time, and he wanted to create a compounding pharmacy to manufacture injectable generic drugs that were in short supply. Because believe it or not, there are drugs, pediatric cancer drugs, drugs for pregnant women that are in short supply and they're generic. You would think that makes no sense at all. But that's the reality. And across the world, you know, there are tens of thousands, if not more, of kids with cancer who die because they can't get access to this stuff. And so he reached out to me and I said, you know what? That's admirable, and we can do that, but that's not thinking big enough. And so it was right around the time that pharma bro Martin Shkreli was going to jail. And I was like talking to Alex, and I was like, how can this dude just buy up, or how can this dude just raise the price of this drug Daraprim to something reasonable to something unreasonable? And what he did was he bought up the entire year's supply of it and did an exclusive. And I'm like, well, that just tells me this industry's messed up. And as I dug in more, it became very apparent that one of the issues was there was zero transparency. And so we created costplusdrugs.com here in Dallas, and it's really, really simple. You go to costplusdrugs.com, you put in the name of the medication, and if it's one of the more than 2,500 that we carry, comes up, tells you what it is, but it shows you our cost. And then it shows you our markup, and if you want it delivered by mail, we have a pharmacist review it. That's $5, and $5 for shipping and handling. That's simple. And then we also have the option now of a pharmacy network to pick it up. And just by doing that, we cut the cost of most generic drugs dramatically, and particularly for a subsection of medications called specialty drugs. The pharmacy benefit managers, the biggest pharmacy benefit managers, created this scam where they call basic generic drugs specialty drugs if they take care of, you know, advanced diseases like cancer, even though there's nothing special about it. It's just a pill like any other pill. And because of that, they took the license to price these things at astronomical levels. So a drug like imatinib, which is used for leukemia, if you just walked into some of the bigger or the biggest pharmacy chains, cost you $2,000. Now maybe they've adjusted and it's $200 to $2,000. Or if your employer signed an agreement with them, they'll make you buy it through them and it'll be $200 to $2,000. The same drug, you go to costplusdrugs.com, like I said, we'll show you a cost on markup, and it might be $25, $30, depending on the cost. I mean, we have other drugs. I had a friend email me, gosh, been, you know, 18 months now, and he needed this drug called Droxidopa. And he had just lost his insurance, and he called up the local pharmacy, and it was going to be $10,000 every 3 months. I'm like, Landon, let me check to see if we can get it. $63 a month, you know, and there's just, I get emails, you know, weekly, if not daily, with the same types of stories. And if you think about it, you know, what happens when you get a prescription from your doctor? They say, you know, Mark, you need this medication. And the next thing they ask you is not, you know, can you afford it? Here's the cost. It's what pharmacy do you use? That's it. And so we're trying to change that paradigm so that people can actually be smart shoppers, because those pharmacy benefit managers working with the insurance companies that they own or own them have figured out ways to extract as much money from patients as they can.
Did you know this much about the drug supply chain?
Oh, no.
When you first
agreed
to join the company?
It's crazy. Like, there are more acronyms than there are in analytics for sports,
know?
It's crazy, and it takes a lot of time still to try to know all this stuff and to find out where the inefficiencies are. Because at the end of the day, if you're going to disrupt an industry like we've done on the pharmaceutical side, you have to understand the industry so you can figure out ways to simplify it.
You mentioned that you're spending a lot of time in meetings and trying to do some sort of
convincing. And lots of emails and calls and stuff.
Yeah, and basically lobbying for change.
Lobbying so much, not so much through the administration per se, right. Not legislatively, but working with CEOs. So, for instance, you know, WFAA and your parent company, right? Who do you get your health care from? And there's a 99.99% chance that the CEO really doesn't understand their healthcare benefits. Mm-hmm. You leave it to HR, who reports to the CFO, and nobody quite understands all of it. And I'll guarantee you that here at Belo, you're getting ripped off. I don't know what your plan is, but I know if you're working through the biggest insurance companies and PBMs, you are getting ripped off.
Are you sure you want to retire from Shark Tank with this sort of energy?
No, this is great, though. I mean, this is the way I've always been.
Right, you know? Right. Has Cost Plus played a role at all in terms of leaving Shark Tank?
No, not really. That was more family and kids.
Okay.
You know, Friday night, ABC still watch Shark Tank.
Love the plug.
But that was because we shoot Shark Tank in June and September.
Right.
June's when my kids get out of school. I was never there. September, I've got multiple kids with birthdays. I missed my son's birthdays all the time because he was still shooting. And it was one thing when they were tiny, right? But you get to a certain age where you start feeling really guilty about that. And plus, I did it for 15 years. You know?
Good run.
Yeah, it's run its course for me.
Okay, so you sell the Mavs. You're leaving Shark Tank. What do we label this new chapter, this new era for Mark Cuban?
The beginning.
The beginning.
Seriously.
Yeah.
You know? Just because the wrinkles are there don't mean the wrinkles are in here, right? And so I'm still as aggressive, still as passionate, still want to have as much of an impact. And Cost Plus won't be the last thing I do. There'll be more. There's, you know, I'm still a tech geek, and there's a lot going on there. And so, you know, there's other industries yet to be disrupted.
You've kind of alluded to it. Is legacy important to you?
Just people always ask me about it, right? Which just tells me everybody thinks I'm getting old. But I don't yet.
So clearly, persistence pays off there, Wheeler. It's a lesson for you.
It is.
Stay on top of things. We've been trying for 5 years. Jonah just comes in 2.5 years.
We say five years. I think that we like got on the podcast 4 or 5 times and said, hey, Mark Cuban, if you want to talk to us, please come. You know,
because we know he's a big listener of Yolitics. That's the reason.
And I've emailed him about other things before, and I love Mark Cuban's email responses. Yeah. They're usually no more than like 2 or 3 words.
No.
No.
Leave
me alone.
Yeah. 4 words and then the letter M as his signature.
Right. That is his signature. Exactly.
Right.
This is not the first time you've talked to him, but you have created a rapport with him. I mean, he knows who you are. Is he the same guy we see on Shark Tank? Is he the same guy we see on Masterclass? Is he the same guy we see in the Jonah Javad interview?
Is he the same guy we see getting fined at games?
Yeah, I think for the most part of that, his personality, his brand is just him all the time. And during our interview, and again, listen, my communication with him is not super in-depth all the time. Yeah. You know, it's not something, you know, super intimate, but we've corresponded enough, you know, over the years. And what I appreciate about him is he is not some PR version of himself. And I think in today's society, we have a tendency to be overly concerned with our reputation, how we're perceived, and he just is. Which is really refreshing and neat. And the last line, we got into this a little bit about legacy, and I asked him if he cares about that, and you know, what he wants to accomplish and all that. But, you know, I said, when it's all said and done, what do you want to be remembered for? And he said, being a great dad. And then kind of asked, would you have done anything differently? And I was like, yeah, always, you know, regrets or this, that, and the other. But, you know, when I die, I want to come back as me, which was like a perfect way to sum up, you know, kind of Mark Cuban's personality. If you've known him for a 45-minute interview, if you've known him for a few years, or you've just met him on the street. So that was kind of my sense in our conversation.
I really respect that. He's got his priorities straight.
And where can people see the interview right now, Jonah, the entire thing?
Yeah. I'll tell you where.
Yeah,
I know
so
where.
That whole thing, you can check it out. It's definitely worth watching, and you kind of get a better sense of Mark Cuban, the man, the businessman, and also the former majority owner of the Mavericks. It's on WFA Plus and our WFA YouTube channel. Should be able to watch the whole thing in its entirety. I highly recommend it. It was a really compelling, fun 45-minute discussion.
Yeah, we're going to make this super simple. We're just going to put the link for the YouTube channel right there in the description for this podcast. Jason Whiteley is going to work on that as soon as we get done recording.
You know what? For all the praise you gave,
how to do that?
For all the praise you gave him, though, Jonah, I'm a little skeptical of Cuban, though, because he acknowledged Wheeler in the hallway downstairs, and that's... I mean,
he might have thought he was a Blues Brother if he had sunglasses on. We're not quite sure what was.
And Wheeler already doesn't talk to anybody as is, so maybe.
I do to Mark Cuban. That was cool. That
Jonah,
was
a great score, man. This is it's a good get, and we're glad you shared it with us here.
It's good
in
to be lucky every now and then.
Well, and hardworking. Persistence pays off.
And vigilant,
2 years,
I suppose.
2 years worth of work.
That's right.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, fellas.